I have a very dramatic announcement. So anyone with a weak heart should leave now.
Unreal. Revolution. Revolution. Uncensored. Revolution. Revolution. Unfiltered. Revolution. Revolution. Unchanged. Revolution. Revolution. Unadulterated. Revolution. Revolution. Unbelievable. CliffCentral.com. Revolution. Revolution. Revolution.
Wow, what an awesome, what a joy it is after all these weeks and weeks away in Australia, being back with my dear friends here on Cliff Central. I'm just so excited to be back with Duncan, who's operating the sound today, and to have met all the friends here in the studio and outside the studio. It's just such a good feeling. You know, one can literally travel the world, but there's only one place, and that place is called home. You are listening to Professor David Block, and I have the privilege, joy, and honor of leading you through the next 1 hour on this live global streaming. I just think it's such an innovative idea that one could be in Australia and streaming live, or you can be in Dubai or Chicago. What an awesome leap of technology this really is. If you wish to reach me in studio today, there are many different methods to do so. Let's start with our favorite one. The favorite methodology of people reaching me, Professor David Block, in studio is Cliff Central. On Facebook, likewise, Cliff Central. The Twitter handle is @CliffCentral.com. And for those who still prefer the traditional telephone links, who feel perhaps a little more secure, dialing that number. The number to dial is 0861-555-189. That's 0861-555-189. A very special thanks, too, to everyone who stood in for me during my visit to Australia. I've literally just touched down, I think, just a day or so ago. And I was in Australia, and then I was in the Cape speaking there to some 3,000 people. Now, as I travel the world, there are many, many topics, many, many themes which come to mind. But I think one of the greatest themes which definitely comes to mind is simply the vastness, the immensity of the universe. Does that ever strike you, Duncan, as a real problem in today's world? It's just the incredible size of it all. Where do you and I fit in to the grand scheme of things?
You know, Professor, I came to the conclusion that it's all unknowable. That's okay. How vast it is. We could never understand it. It's okay. Vastness.
How does it make you feel, though, inside when you look up at, say, just the Milky Way and you see all those twinkling jewels? Does it make you feel that there is a purpose for which you are born, Duncan? Or do you just feel that life is happening at such a fast speed today, as it is in Australia, that it's almost passing us by?
When I look up in the stars, Professor, I feel special, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
I feel privileged.
That's awesome.
To be alive and to be a part of this whole experience that we know as to be life.
Yes, I think that's just awesome. You know, Duncan, feeling really special looking up at the night sky. So, where was I? I have been at, you know, the Mount Stromlo Observatory in Australia. I've been up to Coonabarabran. Let me just try and fill you in, because so few people really understand what actually happens and how we observe today. Many people might think that I use a telescope sitting near an eyepiece, or next to an eyepiece, or looking through an eyepiece and seeing the images unfold in front of my eyes. But nothing could be further from the truth. First of all, I work at observatories, not at planetariums. Now, what is the difference between an observatory and a planetarium? Well, it's very simply put as this. If it's raining, you can still see the stars at a planetarium. Why? Because a planetarium is not a live experience of looking at the stars, for example, the stars of our Milky Way galaxy, live. With the Zeiss projectors at planetaria, for example, we project images of the night sky onto a dome, onto a concrete dome. And then we can, you know, we can simulate. What that's exactly what we do is we can simulate the glories and feast upon the splendors of the night sky using the planetaria in the daytime. So often people say to me, Professor, you know, can I come to the planetarium and, you know, look and gaze at the stars tonight? Well, that question needs a little bit of relearning or rethinking, because the planetarium is a show. It's a production. It's not an experience under the live night sky. So that's the first point, is I was not traveling to visit some of the world's great planetaria. And of course, there are multitudes of planetaria around the world. Our own one at the University of the Witwatersrand here in Johannesburg. Very famous ones, the Haydn Planetarium, New York and Chicago, and indeed around the globe. And interestingly enough, apparently in Australia, there's somebody called Fred Watson, and he does what I do here in South Africa. So wherever I went, Duncan, they introduced me as Australia's Fred Watson. So I thought that was rather cool and neat. But the interesting thing today is we use telescopes that are in very remote locales. For example, the locale which I visited, the Anglo-Australian telescope, is located 9 hours by car north of Sydney, and it's a very long drive, 9 hours, so it's 18 hours a round trip, and it's an incredible visit to undertake. And I had the great privilege of driving up with Professor Kenneth Freeman. Now, Professor Kenneth Freeman is one of the greatest astronomers of all time. He's the father of dark matter. And I'll get on to that in a moment. So we were chilling, driving up. But the interesting thing about astronomy today is that you don't even need to be at the telescope anymore. Why? Well, we have electronic cameras such as CCD arrays, charged coupled devices, and these cameras take the place, if you like, of our eyes. They're far more sensitive than our eyes. They can integrate for many minutes or hours or whatever you want them to do. You can set the integration times moment by moment. And so astronomers don't even need to be at their telescopes anymore. So what do astronomers do? Well, let me give you perhaps an analogy which will help in this regard. It is now possible for a doctor, for example, in City A to conduct an operation, say in remote Africa, provided there is the technology. They can use their hands here to manipulate robotic arms elsewhere in the world. And that's exactly what astronomers do these days, is they would sit in a studio like I'm sitting here now, and they'd look at a screen, and up would pop a star, for example, or a galaxy which they wish to study. And it's quite amazing, you know, Duncan. We simply gaze at our screen. We have remote controls to guide the telescope and to set the telescope and so forth. But the interesting thing is this. We can actually observe from Sydney, from the city of Sydney, with all its bright lights. We can steer the telescope in Coonabarabran, which is 9 hours away. One can steer it remotely, and you can observe remotely. And that's it. By that I mean, you can almost be in your house. You can actually almost be sitting in your house, but most certainly in your office. and you can, you know, use your computer and you can manipulate the positioning of the telescope. You can commence photographing an object by means of not photographic film anymore, but these special cameras such as these charged coupled devices. And so when I arrived in Australia, Professor Freeman was observing. So, you know, people would think, well, Professor Freeman is therefore 9 hours up north using the telescope live. Well, he was using the telescope live. But the interesting thing is, it's not quite a kind of streaming, but in a sense, it's a kind of streaming. It's a streaming in of data remotely. So just like Gareth Cliff took the giant leap of, instead of radio, global streaming live, what there is a streaming of data. So, for example, when I say to you, we are going to use this telescope tonight, it doesn't mean that we are physically going to travel, for example, to Hawaii, to the Mauna Kea observatories to observe. And, of course, in Hawaii right now as I speak, it is 16 minutes past the hour of 2 in the morning. It's 2:16 a.m. in Hawaii. So as I'm talking to you, the telescopes there are operative and all fully so. But if you were to drive up to these great observatories, such as the ones I've been a guest at, the Mauna Kea Observatory in Hawaii or the Mount Stromlo Observatories in Australia, it's a totally different regime. Totally different. For a start, the telescopes might have no astronomers inside the buildings at all. None. There'd be no. There might be one or two engineers per building, per telescope, to actually ensure that all is up and running. But I just found that so fascinating in Australia is that here you can actually sit at your computer, at your desk, at your office. You don't need to fly anywhere. You observe remotely. And it's just like perhaps an autopilot, in a sense, synthesizer. It's just like sitting and being in charge of the plane, but remotely so. I was privileged. I've undertaken many flights recently, of course, but I was privileged recently to be invited by a very dear friend of mine by name Gareth Stead. And Gareth Stead invited me to come and address his jewels, his audience, his flock, his folk in Cape Town. And they said to us as we were flying in, we are going to be landing on autopilot. And I thought, well, this is neat. And they said, well, we don't always or often use autopilot to land, you know, the plane, but today it'll be done hands off. And there it was. And the plane landed beautifully. And I could meet Gareth and Wendy Stead. And I could meet the incredible family. I was so touched that as we sat around a table there, they were reading. It's just so rare to see people reading these days. But the point I'm getting to is it's possible to land a plane without human intervention. Or actually being there, as it were. And so it is with telescopes. And here is a lovely question from Jerome, or a thought. Prof, I, together with friends, colleagues, are using apps such as Stellarium to watch the past and future solar, lunar eclipses, constellations. Such amazing apps on offer for free these days. Well, Jerome, that is just such a glorious thought. That is just spot on. That's right at the cutting edge. I want to tell you that that's exactly true. I have been privy to seeing these apps in motion, working. And yes, right now I could hold up my phone with one of these apps at the daytime sky. And it might show me, Jerome, that there is Mars, or there is Jupiter, or there is Saturn. Of course, you can't see it with a naked eye because it is daytime. But you can position using these apps. You can indeed see the sky at any time of day and of night. Isn't that incredible to think that here I was in remote locales and you could actually, it's true. You're reminding me of a very important point. One can actually just hold up your mobile phone with free apps such as Stellarium and not only gaze at the awesomeness of the night sky, but you can actually position yourself. And I think that's what I'm thinking about in the cockpit again, this autopilot, is that, you know, it was just so incredibly well programmed that there I could be in this aircraft, you know, and then be hosted by Gareth Stead at his People in One City. And, you know, it was just so awesome, and it was all just done remotely, as it were. And I think you've brought up, you know, I'd like to encourage all my listeners today on Looking Up with David Block to download apps such as Stellarium. And you are quite right. Not only do these apps allow you to see the sky for free by day or by night, but it takes a lot of the load off you. Because, you know, in days gone by when I grew up, Duncan, I had to remember the orientations of the sky. I had to remember where I was, and I had to know, well, this position led me to this locale, and this locale would lead me to this galaxy, and so forth. But no more. These apps such as Stellarium are absolutely spot on. They are spot on. They're amazing, as you say, Jerome, and they are free. Now, here is another one, thought, and I just want to read this. It says, Cliff Central hasn't been the same without the Starry Galaxy Man. You were sorely missed. Well, inappropriate, as I see your name is on the stream here. Well, I haven't been the same without you, inappropriate. I have missed you. I can honestly say that while I've been privy to using and meeting, you know, some of the great minds of the age and working with, you know, Professor Kenneth Freeman, one of the greatest minds, one of the greatest living scientists alive today, I was, in fact, sorely missing you. And every Tuesday, I would think that, you know, if I were back home, what would I be doing now? Well, I would be talking to precious jewels such as Inappropriate and Jerome and Tandy and others. And I see there's even one, Pascal. Oh, what a lovely name that is, named after, I guess, Blaise Pascal. But there we are. So back to just the excitement. I hope you can hear it in my voice. I am just so excited to be back here at Cliff Central, to be sharing with you the awesomeness of cutting edge technology, not only by means of global streaming, but by means of the global streaming of data. And so back to us using telescopes, you would find that on many of my visits to these observatories, we never go to the telescope anymore. We observe remotely. And I think you understand now how we do this. And then, of course, the data does get streamed in via computer. And the image builds up on our screen. And eventually, you might, for example, see an image of the Andromeda Spiral Galaxy or the Triangulum Spiral Galaxy or so forth, you know, just in real time. And I think that's just so awesome. It takes us to the cutting edge of how astronomers do things these days. You know, how do we actually do it? How do we actually gaze in the case of the Andromeda Spiral Galaxy? How do we gaze 2 million years back into time? Well, it's all done no longer by means of the antiquated methodology of using the eye and, you know, gazing through the eyepiece. And those were awesome days. I was just sharing at Gareth Stead's church, his People, that, you know, I remember in 1969, I got up one morning and I had a look visually with my eye at the planet Saturn, and it was just so awesome, so beautiful. I see on screen is appearing live streaming from the ISS, the International Space Station. And, you know, it just says here in the little caption, live video from the International Space Station, including views of the Earth, the crew on duty, what they are doing. And another one, NASA, live streaming now. So that's really incredible. I mean, here's the International Space Station, and it's busy orbiting the Earth, and you and I can actually just stream in globally, all of us can do this, and, you know, see what the crew is seeing as if we were there. And I am just watching now live on an HD feed, the Earth viewing experiment on Ustream, and it's live, and it's, you know, prefixed ISS, International Space Station, live HD Earth viewing, and before me, right here in cliffcentral.com, you are watching the swirling turbulent clouds. I mean, it's just awesome. It takes my breath away as I see the turbulence. I think of the theory of turbulence, Duncan. It's called Kolmogorov turbulence, with a K to the 5/3 power law, as Palisa would remember. Not K to the 4/3, but K to the 5/3. And so, yes, I mean, here we can stream live. We can watch the Earth from space live. Just now in front of me, I see the sun setting over some parts of the Earth. And again, it's done live. So that's exactly, this is a beautiful way in which we observe the skies today, is it's all done by means, it's all done electronically, not by means of the eye. And we can literally, as I just did a minute ago, Duncan and I were sitting in the International Space Station, weren't we? In a very, very real sense. What does it make you feel like? Just looking at these HD feeds, Duncan. I mean, why? How do you feel to think that you don't have to no longer be there and see a sunset from space?
Honestly, Professor, I feel like anything is impossible. And I just want to put a question to you, Professor. How long till South Africa specifically sends a man to the moon or just out of space from South Africa?
Yes, well, I think that's a very interesting question. And of course, we do remember that Mark Shuttleworth did do this, being South African. I think his budget was slightly bigger than yours, Duncan, or mine. His budget, I think if I remember correctly, it was 220 million. Now, I'm not sure if it was dollars or rands. I think it may have been 220 million rands. Duncan's just checking up for me. But I know it wasn't just a train ride to, you know, to Cape Town. And it was slightly more addressing Gareth Stead than it was staying at Evertsdal, I would have supposed, is that that was a 220 million budget. But it may have been 220 million rand. I can't remember if it was rand or dollars, but the number 220 million certainly pops up. And so in Australia, I had the unique privilege of
rand
spending time, and Duncan has confirmed it. I was correct. It was 220 million rand that Mark Shuttleworth spent on going up into space. So, but there again, it was just a ride to the International Space Station and back. That's not going to the moon. That's simply a little ride in space around the Earth. If you want to go to moon, it's another story. And I just don't know. I think that Duncan, we need to shift our focus from terrestrial matters at times and have a broader perspective. For example, I understand many of our statues are in the poo at the moment. I've been overseas, so I didn't know this, but I've come back, Duncan, and is that correct that many statues are actually in the poo?
That is absolutely correct, Professor.
Okay. So apparently the statues are in the poo while I'm busy studying the birth and death of the stars and of galaxies. And Asiya gives me a warm smile as he's about to depart at this unusual hour of 2:29:15, which is obviously a job I must aspire to. I would also like to clock off at 2:29:15 instead of clocking off at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. In the evening or 4 a.m. and so forth. But a lovely thought here. Let's just read it. It's coming up live from Iber. I hope I've got your name pronounced correctly, Iber, Y-B-E-E-R or Aber. You tell me, please, on your next WeChat if it's Aber or Iber. But he says, And let me just read this. Missed you, Prof. Block. Glad to look up at the skies again. Well, that's just so awesome. Thank you so much, Eba, for that. You know, instead of looking at the poo below, and I understand we need to poo, but instead of looking at the poo below, I look up. And I'm so glad that you missed me. I'm glad. I feel that I've just missed you. When I walked into studio and Jono gave me a cup of coffee, and it was just, it's still an awesome cup of coffee. It's decreasing in temperature as it should with its, you know, with, by well-known mathematical laws and so forth. And I could give you the equations online, but I'll share you the pain of doing so. And, you know, being hugged by people and so forth. I truly did miss you too, Abra. And I just trust that you will enjoy in the weeks and months to come again the awesomeness of looking up. You are listening to Professor David Block. We are looking up together into the awesomeness of space and of cosmic time. But how about some music? Well, I am so excited to be back here in South Africa. You are listening to David Block, Professor David Block. I occupy the position of a professor of computational and applied mathematics here at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. And that leads me on to a very funny little story. People could not pronounce that name, Duncan. For some reason or another, they couldn't pronounce Witwatersrand, so they would say Witwatersrand. And so it was quite funny, actually. Nobody could get it right, and then they'd stumble and say Witwatersrand. And they never got this right. And it shows you, isn't it? Each country has their own lingo. We understand rand means reef, and wit is white, and water is water. But to them, water might mean the US dollar. I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, the interesting thing is, you've up on the screen in front of me, and that's why I love working here too, is just, you know, just the awesomeness of the instantaneousness of the moment is where I worked. So if you Google Mount Stromlo Observatory, up will come a page with the buildings where I worked. So what you do is you go to www.google.com and then just Google Mount Stromlo Observatory. So let's just go slowly. That's Mount for mountain, if you like. M-O-U-N-T. So that's Mount. And then Stromlo is S for sugar, T for Tommy, R for Robert, O, M for Mary, L for Larry, O. So that's Stromlo. S for sugar, T, R, O, M for Mary, L O, Mount Stromlo Observatory in Canberra. And it'll come up with pictures, hosts of pictures. And that's where I worked. And up came an image just a moment ago of a space-like building. Really, it's hard to believe that that building is actually on Earth, is it not? It almost just looks so much so spacey. What did you use the word? Magic.
It looks really magical. I encourage everyone just to look up Mount Stromlo Observatory. It's amazing.
Yes, so there we go, the Mount Stromlo Observatory. And I was their guest for a good many weeks, almost a couple of months, and it was just so awesome to work in this environment which has been described by Duncan, who's doing the audio today, as magical. And I think that's how I felt every step of the day. Is it felt to me as if one's treading on the holy ground. Well, why the holy ground? Because using those telescopes, gazing upward, I can even see the yellow building to the left, Duncan, where I walked every single day to my office. So what was I actually doing at this observatory? First of all, let me just give you some history of the observatory. It's one of the earliest developments in the Canberra district of Australia, the ACT area. and it was established in 1924. But the interesting thing is it wasn't established to study the stars. It was actually first established to study the sun. And its name was first the Commonwealth Solar Observatory. So in other words, but if you look very neat at, if you Google Mount Stromlo Observatory and you see the images, you'll see the beautiful space-like engineering buildings and the domes. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about those domes and a little bit about their history. There are no longer any operative telescopes at the specific observatory. Everything is global streaming. So what happened was, is that a great fire, the Canberra bushfires in 2003, destroyed the telescopes at this observatory. That, of course, was a monumental loss, is that we lost all these telescopes at the specific observatory. But we now have all these other telescopes 9 hours up north near the town of Coonabarabran. And so those telescopes have remained intact, untouched by fires, although they were almost touched by fires. Certainly the accommodation quarters were touched by fires just a few years ago. And that's one of the things about living in Australia. People have asked me since I've got back, you know, what was it like being in Australia for so long, in a sense? Well, many thoughts. The first thing is, there was no load shedding, and that I enjoyed amazingly, is that there was never a night I'd come home and say to myself, well, tonight I simply can't chill, you know, or cook a meal because here I am without electricity. The interesting thing was, is that I asked many people in Australia what would happen in Australia if there was load shedding, and they said to me the relevant department would immediately be fired, or the government would immediately be fired. And that was quite a spine-chilling thought, is that the minister responsible for this in Australia would actually lose his seat. He'd be fired on the spot. So that certainly was quite a riveting lesson. People couldn't quite believe when I told them that, you know, there are build-ups of like 2 hours to travel from Monte Cassino to Northcliffe, a mere distance of 18 k's or 22 k's. People could, in Australia, they could not believe that I would sit, or my wife, my beloved wife Liz, would sit in a car for 2 hours to cover a distance of 20 k's. It's unheard of in at the Mount Stromlo Observatory area. It's absolutely unheard of. But not to politics, back to astronomy. There I was each day in my office and, you know, working alongside and with my dear and beloved friend, Professor Kenneth Freeman. Now, what is his claim to fame? He is essentially the father of dark matter. And it turns out that a vast percentage of our universe cannot ever be studied with the naked eye or with the sophisticated telescopes. A huge majority of our cosmos is dark and is unseen. There's matter out there, which we call dark matter, but no scientist yet knows what that dark matter is. How do we know the matter's there? Well, we can observe its effects. For example, if you've got a black hole in space, we can't see the black hole, but we can observe the effects of the black hole. We can observe the black hole sucking in gas from its environs. And that's exactly the same with dark matter. We can't see dark matter, but we can certainly read about dark matter. And so I would urge Rebecca Stead, whom I met in Cape Town, who just adores reading, I would urge Rebecca Stead, whom I met just a day ago or so, 2 days ago, to read about dark matter, enigmatic dark matter. I think it's awesome, you know, Duncan, to think that there's so much out there which is mysterious, which is unseen. And you used the word magical, and that's what it was to me working at the Mount Stromlo Observatory. And I've been a guest there many, many times over many, many years. It's almost like a second home to me. But it is magical. Why? Because one is working with some of the greatest astronomers alive. One can go to the most awesome seminars given by these astronomers. And somehow, one is living at the cutting edge of one's dreams. What are one's dreams? Well, my specific dream is to study the cosmos. But then I also had the privilege of being invited to speak at Emmanuel College. Now, Emmanuel College is up on the Gold Coast in Australia. So that, Duncan, is the home of the famous beaches. If you want to surf, you go to the Gold Coast. I mean, this is the place to chill. This is the place just to hang out. And I was invited to speak in a huge theater called the Emmanuel Theater on the Gold Coast. And they wanted to see some of the latest slides, some of the latest images, which we as astronomers have secured. And so a very dear friend of mine, Gordon Johnson, had organized for me to speak once to the public and once to school children in the area. And it must be remembered that I have a huge school outreach program for historically disadvantaged children here in South Africa, which is really sponsored by Standard Bank, helping us to look forward. And it's an awesome privilege to travel around the world with their backing in the sense of reaching school learners. Aber has now replied, "You had it perfect at the end, Prof." Well, that's just awesome, Aber. I just see an awesome image of you. And, you know, when I look at your image, Aber, I see a man and you are made of cosmic stardust. And I just think that is just so lovely. Pinch yourself. Ah, and here comes up a nice big image of Aber, and he's holding a glass. I'm not sure you can tell me what you're holding there, Aber. I can see it is of something. It could be champagne. It could be wine. What else could it be, Duncan? Do we know?
It couldn't be we, could it, Professor?
It could, you know. You know, having been away for so long, I suppose anything is possible. If statues are in the poo, yeah, we could be drinking we as well. But I love your smile. I love the look in your eyes. You're obviously a futurist, Aber. You're looking towards the future. You want to stay at the cutting edge. You want to look up. You want to be at the cutting edge. And I just salute you, whatever you're holding in your hand. But back to book writing and to sponsorships. It was an incredible experience every day to sit and think. Now, I'd like to ask all my listeners on this program this question. When last have you seen The Thinker? So Duncan's going to just Google it now. It's called The Thinker. So it's the, and then Thinker by Rodin. That's right, R-O-D-I-N. And, you know, let's just ponder the awesomeness of The Thinker. So we're Googling it right now so that I've got it in front of me. And up it's going to come, and there it comes. And so there's The Thinker, and it's right in front of me. And so what do I see? I see – what do you see, Duncan?
I see something that I don't see very often, Professor. Just
yes,
a man on a rock with his hand on his chin, facing down and thinking.
Now, tell me something, Duncan. When last have you ever seen somebody sitting on a rock, alone, pondering, in silence, thinking? Have you ever seen that, Duncan?
Not unless they drugged up or drunk off something, Professor.
Yes. Mm. And I think that is an incredible thought, is that I asked people in Cape Town when last they've seen this, and somebody thought I was asking the question, when last have you seen a naked man? I wasn't actually asking that. I was asking I was asking the question, when, and Google this, Google The Thinker by Rodin, R-O-D-I-N. And there is a man, and he's on a rock, and he's thinking. And he's obviously getting somewhere because he's thinking. And that's one of the joys which struck me so about the children of Gareth and Wendy Stead, is that at whatever restaurant they took me to, their children took books with them, and they sat there, Duncan. It was incredible to watch. When last have you been to a restaurant, Duncan, and seen a child reading a book?
I can't even remember, Professor.
I know.
Mm.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? And the point really is that to me is one path of richly savoring the awesomeness of looking up, is that I would like to challenge everyone to the following thought. Well, the following thought is that if you want to really look up, you must spend some time in silence thinking. I'm not saying you have to do it every day. I'm not saying you have to look like a dodo. But if it is true that we've never seen a person thinking, say sitting on a rock, just thinking for the last year or two, and tell me on WeChat. Remember, you listening to Professor David Block, you reach me on WeChat, ID Cliff Central. Tell me on WeChat, when last have you seen someone thinking in silence, sitting on a chair or sitting on a rock? When last have you observed someone doing this? Feel free to call me. I'd love to read your thoughts. Or do you think I'm an extraterrestrial ET from another planet telling people on Earth to think? But it's a great point. The one I'm raising is that Professor Freeman thinks, and all the astronomers at Mount Stromlo Observatory are generally working in silence, and they're thinking. And I think that's what makes the Mount Stromlo Observatory such a great place to visit. And as I say, I've been there just multitudes of times already, is that you can sit in silence, Duncan, and you can think. So Abe has just answered the question. He's holding champagne, he says, for sure, Prof, not pee, Duncan. Okay, so this is greatly a relief to know that you're not holding poo or pee. I see that a lot of words with pee are in the news in South Africa. If it's not pee, then it's poo. But I'm glad to see you are rejoicing with a little glass of champagne. That also reminds me, just as a little side story, of, the cost of champagne in Australia. And, Duncan, a typical steak in Australia would cost about $40. That's 400 rand. So you three people, they each order a steak. They say, don't worry, don't think in rands, think in dollars. So it's 40 times three, so it's $120. Doesn't sound a lot. But then then the Standard Bank beeps, and my phone beeps, and it says, you now 1,200 rand in the red in your credit card. And I look at them and I say, and that's without the champagne. So one has to realize that if you're taking out a party of two to eat, it's going to cost you the best part of 1,500 to 2,000 rand, $150 to $200 to take out three people to eat. How would that make you feel, Duncan?
I'd probably bake at home, Professor.
Well, I think for South Africans, to travel and eat and live in Australia, unless you're really earning in dollars, the costs are absolutely phenomenal. They are almost unbearably high. But back to the central theme. Astronomy, gazing up at the night sky, dark matter, dark energy. I was invited to give a lecture. And so the people started, flocking into the lecture. But then, Duncan, I noted that a Nobel Prize winner was in the audience. And I felt very humbled at this, because here I am, born in Mogale City, in Krugersdorp. What have I got to say, truly? What have I got to say to a Nobel Prize winner? I mean, what do I have to say, for example, to a man who has actually won the Nobel Prize? And yet, without going into any details, this man came up, emailed me afterwards and said to me, that is one of the greatest talks I've ever heard, one of the greatest lectures I've ever heard. And so just reminded me of the preciousness, the jewels we have on this earth, who are encouraged somewhat, to some degree, by listening to me, David, sharing, a mere mortal guy born in Krugersdorp. Someone's calling me, and it is Gareth from Cape Town. Gareth, hi.
Professor Block. Yes, this is your friend Gareth from Cape Town. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm looking up. How are you? You are the Gareth who completed the 56K ultra marathon. I salute you, and I salute you globally for doing this. How are you today?
Thanks, Professor. I'm not doing too great. I'm restraining my cough like you say they do in the Pavarotti.
Oh, good. So you will not cough. You promised me you will not cough on air. Yes.
I will do my best. But the question I have, well, firstly, to answer your previous question.
Yes.
The thinker, when we saw that, was actually in Night at the Museum, that movie that had a trilogy.
Yes.
Recognized that thinker statue immediately because of the movie, funny enough.
And that was called The Night.
The Night at the Museum.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you've seen the movie.
And so what did your children have to say about this? Did they feel challenged? Did they feel that perhaps we should be thinking more? Although, as I've said earlier, I salute your children for taking books to restaurants. But did it ring home a central note of encouragement to think?
Well, not directly. I think they just thought the movie was really cool and really funny.
Yes.
But what I enjoyed is that it took statues and pieces of history and made it real to them so they remembered it. So
yes.
When they saw that image that you showed us about the thinker, immediately they recognized. They said that was from Night at the Museum.
Wonderful.
I have to explain them, actually.
Wonderful.
It's a famous statue by a famous artist. But
yes.
The movie did give it attention. So
yes.
I thought that was quite amusing.
Well, I think that, you know, I remember you taking something like 100,000 strides in your great marathon of 6 hours and 54 minutes. And, you know, each stride, I would, you know, if I could just encourage everyone, 100,000 people, say, if they were listening to my voice and everyone taking one stride of 1 minute of thinking in silence, that could revolutionize our world. It could revolutionize us. Did not even the Apostle Paul say, be transformed by the renewing of your mind?
For sure. Professor, my question I have for you,
yes.
if there's time to address it,
yes.
The question of intelligence in design.
Yes.
I've so enjoyed your presentation, The Universe, Accident or Design.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you've seen the documentary that Ben Stein put together a few years ago in the States called Expelled.
Expelled, I did. Absolutely.
Quite controversial because a lot of people saw it as just Christian propaganda.
Yes.
But he did also interview people like Richard Dawkins and many other famous scientists.
Yes.
Really tried to explore this question of is there intelligence in the cosmos, in the universe. So maybe you'd just like to talk about
that from
your point of view a bit.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Gareth, for asking about that. I do see, of course, as I mentioned and shared at His People N1 City, I see a universe of incredible design, of incredible order. I do not see a universe which is purposelessness. What's very interesting is that in Expelled, the scientist who proclaimed that the universe was designed was expelled, in quotes, unquote. He was expelled, wasn't he? He was, you know, made to be not part of the community. And whenever you stick your neck out and speak and address questions such as design and God, you can so often be expelled. And it's a theme I want to pick up, in fact, next week, Gareth, with you. One more question we have from Andrew in Belito. Andrew.
Hi, Prof.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, and well, and yourself?
Are you chilling?
Yeah, chilling.
Are you looking up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you ask me a question, Andrew? How lovely to have you sharing from Belito.
Thanks. So Prof, my question really is about your earlier discussion regarding technology and the way that it enables you to study the stars from wherever, really.
Yes.
And then
tying
that together with the thought of the thinker.
Yes.
And just to say, do you not think that as much as technology has brought advantages into our lives, it also has perhaps limited our capacity as humans to stop and pause and take a moment to think? You know, you look around and everybody's glued to their smartphones.
Yes.
How can we make a moment in our lives for time to think or in this world?
Yes. Yes. No, absolutely so. I think that To answer your question, Andy, technology has to be one's slave, not one's master. I think that's the great problem, Andy, is that today there are so many people and technology is their master. It almost brushes their teeth for them. It almost makes them think, doesn't it? It almost poos for them in a real sense. What I'm suggesting is to move into a different phase space of Rodin, the night at the museum, as we've heard earlier, to think, to actually let technology do it for you. But we have to be in the cockpit, in control. Absolutely. Would you agree, Andy?
Yes, I like that view.
I think that, you know, with technology, I've described from Australia, it's leading us, it's guiding us, it's taking us to the new cutting edge, but technology must always keep its place. It must be our slave. It must never, never, never be our master. This is Professor David Block thanking you for all your myriads of questions and encouragement. It is so good to be back home. Tune in next week. Ask your questions next week. Always, always look up. And finally, Jerome, he says, we love you, Prof. You motivate and inspire us. Well, Jerome, what can I say but God bless you richly? Thank you, thank you, thank you. Signing out, David Block.
CliffCentral.com.